Previously on Willing to Adapt.
Dickens adapts well. He writes great stories.
Yeah.
It's reading something in a way that's different than what we're used to.
And you're right. We purposely turn a blind eye to those things that impact our, the things that we supposedly need.
They were cheap boarding schools that were advertised in London papers with an emphasis on, quote, no holiday, and they were a very convenient place to dispose of unwanted or illegitimate children. And so he's more moralistic, and it's more about what kind of a person are you. It's not about class, it's not about how much money you have, it's more about what are you doing with what you've been given, and are you caring about your fellow man? Basically, like, almost everything that can go wrong for the Nickleby family is because of Ralph.
I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
And I hope you listened to our last episode where we talked about Charles Dickens and his book, the
Nicholas Nickleby.
Well, it's more than that. It's The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby.
Yes, the titles on the cover of the book do not actually give you the full title.
No, which was a serialization, and it became a novel. There's a lot of context information in that last one. I hope you can go back and listen to it. It's very helpful, and it will help with this one, where we talk about the 2002 film adaptation, Just Nicholas Nickleby. When did you first watch this?
For this?
Uh-huh.
After I read the book.
I ask you these questions, but I know the answers, but the listeners don't. So
We did wait till I finished the book before I watched the movie.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Usually I read half of the something and then watch the movie and then finish.
Can we hear something funny? The reason why I first read this book is because I saw the trailer for the movie on Amazon, and I was like, I really want to watch this movie.
Okay.
But when I found out it was a Charles Dickens book, I was like, I kind of need to read the book. I just have this rule in my life sometimes where it's one or the other. It's like I'm either just going to watch this and not read the book so that I can just enjoy this, or it's refuse to watch this until I've read the book. It's one or the other. I don't know why.
Well, at least you do it each in the full form before. Instead of splitting it up.
I went to you when we were trying to figure out what to read and so on. Yes, this is how long ago this was. Because I started reading Nicholas Nickleby when I was listening to the audiobook version of Who Censored Roger Rabbit.
Wow. Okay.
That's how long ago that we started. Anyway, Nicholas Nickleby is a 2002 period comedy drama film written and directed by Douglas McGrath. One of the only things I can think of off the top of my head that anybody who might know that he has done is he did the Gwyneth Paltrow version of Emma back in the 90s.
Okay.
The screenplay, again, like I said, is based off of Charles Dickens' The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. And the film stars Charlie Hunnam, who some people might recognize from Guns of Anarchy, which I did not watch, but he was in that. It also stars Nathan Lane, Jim Broadbent, Christopher Plummer, Jamie Bell, Anne Hathaway, Romola Garari, I don't know, Alan Cumming, and Timothy Spall. Yep.
Who's Romola Garari?
It's Kate.
Really?
Yes. This was her film debut.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what else she's been in, but this is her debut. It was a good movie.
It was. No.
I enjoyed it.
I did too.
Yeah. It looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's accurate to the time period, which I always like. It was artistic. It was warm and it was cold at the same time. It was a great cast.
It was.
On the commentary, McGrath joked and said that because they had such a great cast, he was worried. He's like, if someone just dropped a bomb on us right now, we would lose so many good actors.
I don't know. That's a dark way of looking at things, but
so you enjoyed it?
I did. The book was long. It was not a slog, but it was long.
It was
took
long,
a while.
Yes.
So it was nice to see.
And the film's a very different format.
It is a very different format. So it was. I thought it was a very pleasant way to adapt the story. I will say I completely understand all the stuff that was cut.
Oh, yeah.
But I actually had a little bit of fun. Oh, that's different. Oh, that's mm-hmm. different. Oh, hey, this is, you know, this happened here or this happened there.
Yeah.
The only part I didn't miss was the, which we didn't talk about in the last episode, was the two stories that happened after the carriage accident, which I still to this point do not understand why that was even in the book. It was after that accident that the book got interesting again.
Is that? Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, on his way to Dota Boys. Hall, the carriage.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that because it was not important at all.
No, it wasn't. It's like if you don't.
I mean, it was cool. Like the thing about Dickens is he includes a lot to make it feel very real.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. I think one of the best ways you can adapt Dickens is if you made it a miniseries.
Yes.
Which I think we also saw with Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little different because that was just a book.
They did make it into a miniseries, didn't they?
Nicholas Nickleby?
Yeah.
They might have, I don't know. Probably. But this wasn't.
No. I think it was a BBC one.
I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised. BBC has done everything.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the changes right off the bat in the film, it opens with a paper theater. Paper theaters were very common in the Victorian period. They were these little toy theaters that you could pull characters and set pieces on and off,
mm-hmm.
and they were made of paper, like it says. And McGrath did this on purpose because he wanted to show kind of what you were going to expect in the film, and also because theater plays a relatively significant part in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's narrated in the beginning by Nathan Lane.
I liked that. I thought it was a very nice opening.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if that was something they did back then. I'm not as familiar with it's Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I liked the way it opened, and it also kind of closed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was confused about this at first, which is why I like listening to the commentary because they explain things.
Okay.
One of the biggest differences again in from the book to the movie is in the book Nicholas and Madeline get married, and so does Kate and Frank Cheeryble.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like a little bit of an epilogue where it's like their children are now, and like the children will play around Smike's grave and stuff. And so like Smike's still part of the family and mm-hmm. stuff. It's kind of like sad but happy, you know? But in the movie, there's like a joint wedding between Kate and Frank with
mm-hmm.
Nicholas and Madeline. And it references at the end the gravestones and stuff.
Correct,
but
yeah.
It's a little different. And also like in the movie, literally all the characters come back.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Crummles family come back. Whereas in the book, the Crummles actually get a job in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they take off.
And they leave at probably like the 75% part in the book.
Yeah.
And we never see them again. But, you know, for a film, you know, the climax, you want to see the denouement, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to see all the characters that you saw back again. It's like a nice farewell, you know? It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You know who I was wondering in the final scene, if he was there, was... the Yorkshire guy.
Yes. So, you know what's funny
John
about
that? John
Brody. So, I was going to say, at the wedding, there is that paper theater
uh-huh.
at the end. The director, McGrath, said the intention for that was that paper theater was given to them by the Crummles.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like a circle, you know, like we mm-hmm. come full circle
okay.
sort of thing. So, he said, John Brody,
mm-hmm.
that character, he wanted him there at the end. The actor was busy doing something else.
Oh, wow.
So he was supposed to be there.
Okay.
But he couldn't be. And so he was just hoping that nobody noticed.
Because I wondered at the end when he was talking about family and you build your mm-hmm. family, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he wanted him there. It just didn't work out.
Okay.
Yeah, like logistically with schedules.
There was no CGI yet. No AI.
No, and I don't think they would have. I don't think they use any CGI in this movie at all.
Probably not. No.
No, I think it's all practical, mm-hmm. which I love. It's fun because a lot of it was, I mean, it was all filmed in England, but it's fun because if you listen to the commentary, he talks about it. They filmed quite a few of the scenes at like a really, well, one's filmed at like an actual mansion that you can go visit, and it's like a museum now. And then of course there's a couple theaters that are real that they filmed in, but there's a lot of the setting that they filmed at like one big house in London somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple parts where they're supposed to be at a park that's just their backyard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so like, even like the lobby of the theater that Kate runs through at one point mm-hmm. is actually just one of the halls in the house. Yeah, like they just repurposed a lot of it, and it worked really well.
Yeah.
You would never know. So the movie did a really good job. I didn't notice this at first. I kind of did, but I didn't. The movie does a really good job of balancing the light and the dark. And from the beginning, like, he really wanted you to see this story has both tragedy and comedy.
Okay.
And so when it opens, like, it does the whole thing. Like, you come into this world and, like, you're slapped, like, with the baby slapped and to breathe, and it cries. And but then it shows the really happy family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything. But then it does this pan movement where it's like it shows the family, but then it shows a dead bird.
Yeah.
And then it moves on. And it's like he does a lot of things like that in the beginning and then later on as well,
mm-hmm.
to prepare you that there will be sad things, but there will be happy things. And you will need to expect both.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of fun. Like, it's stuff that wasn't really in the book, but it works for it, and it was true to it, and that sort of thing.
No, I agree. I thought it was a really well done movie.
Mm-hmm. One of the changes that they made was the film moves the setting from the 1830s to the 1850s, and this was basically by request of the designer, so that they can better show the elements of the Industrial Revolution. Because by the 1850s, they were steeply in the Industrial Revolution,
mm-hmm.
whereas it was still kind of the onset in the 1830s, and it wouldn't have been quite as obvious,
mm-hmm.
but then it helps with a lot of the storytelling and the obviously aesthetic. Because then they wanted to really differentiate between, it was in Devon, where the Nickleby Cottage is.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted to really differentiate between that world that they grew up in, and this like idyllic world,
mm-hmm.
very simple and innocent,
mm-hmm.
and then when they were forced to go to London, and it's just like the opposite.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And as they were saying, it's actually a very realistic interpretation of Victorian London at the time, especially like the low end of Victorian London.
Yeah.
Like where you see things like pigs' heads just sitting in the back of wagons, and like the sad reality of like coffins being made for babies,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, you know?
So I think for me, one of the big pluses of the movie was, of course, like you said before, the cast.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
It was a well-casted film.
It was a well-casted film, yes. Especially the Crumleys, Mrs. Crumley.
Crumbles?
The Crumbles,
Did you say that on purpose?
Huh?
Did you say that on purpose?
I was reading right here and I got Cherubly. And then I said Crumley instead of Crumbles.
Yep, that's my surname.
I meant Crumbles. Crumbles.
Because
at first when Mrs. Crumbles comes on, I'm like, wait a minute.
Uh-huh. You know, it's funny because a lot Dickens writes characters that are very realistic, and he writes characters that are very larger than life,
mm-hmm.
and they exist in the same world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun. I think in a lot of ways Nicholas is very realistic,
mm-hmm.
and then there are characters like Mrs. Crumbles who are not. And so they leaned into that a bit with the film. And were you going to talk about it?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So in the film, Mrs. Crumbles is a smug, opinionated, but lovable. They realized that all her traits and characteristics were embodied by Dame Edna Everidge, the alter ego of actor Barry Humphreys. But they were hesitant to suggest casting a male in the role. The producers, however, agreed that Humphreys was an ideal choice. But I did not notice this, because I'm not as familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
I did not notice this until I listened to the commentary. Humphreys had asked that if he could play a male as well.
Yes, I saw that.
And so
I saw that he
plays Mr. Leadville.
Yes.
Literally, he talks to himself
yes.
in the movie.
I thought that was well done.
But I think what really works by having him play Mrs. Crumbles,
mm-hmm.
besides the fact that it, from an artistic standpoint, it really works.
Yeah.
Because she thinks so highly of herself, but she's not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very artistic. They're very theatrical, like literally like this big theatrical troupe. It's like a family troupe, you know. They have the infant phenomenon, mm-hmm. who's like really 18.
She's been, what did I say? She's been...
She's been 10 for 10 8 years. And that character's based off of like a real life actress at the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think what really works is they told him to play it straight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not a parody of a woman. You are just a woman.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what really worked for it. I liked it. I didn't really question it. It just worked. So one of the things is they added really early at the beginning when Nicholas and his family first go to Ralph. They added in Madeline Bray going and asking for help from Ralph in the movie.
Is that where she was coming out of?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
I saw her, but I didn't pay attention to where she was coming
from. If you listen to the dialogue that they added in for the film, she's pleading with him,
mm-hmm.
and she says, "Do you want my father to end up in debtor's prison?"
Okay.
And then Ralph says, "I don't care where your father sleeps."
I missed that. I do remember that scene.
It comes fast.
Okay.
And then she like runs down the stairs crying, and she sees them and is embarrassed, and mm-hmm. she runs off, which happens a couple times in the movie. Which is why I think, you know, for modern eyes, I think she comes off just like a crybaby,
mm-hmm.
if you're not really paying attention.
Yeah.
But that's just because the book, they cut a lot out.
Yes,
but
they do.
It's funny because she did this right after she did Princess Diaries.
Mm,
okay. It was the year after Princess Diaries that she did this.
Okay.
And so people would have been aware of her because of that.
Mm-hmm. But she hadn't had her break away fully from Disney yet.
No, not yet. She hadn't moved on to other, like, quote-unquote mature roles.
Yeah.
Yes.
You did mention something in the last episode about, was it then? That, or maybe before we record, I can't remember, about what? There was a change they made that you didn't like or that you felt was unnecessary?
Yes. I'm going to lead up to it.
Okay.
And a lot of the context that I gave in the last one is going to play into that.
Okay, because I'm curious.
Yes. The one thing I missed mm-hmm. in the film, which it was fine, like it was fine. I missed Mr. Nog's character in the film because in
the paring down of him is what do you mean that
they cut his character down a lot.
Yeah,
I mean they cut everybody's character down a lot.
Yeah,
but in the book, you really learn that he was once a gentleman. Like he was like from like the aristocracy, it hints,
mm-hmm.
but he lost everything.
Yeah.
And it was like he owed Ralph so much mm-hmm. that he just kind of ended up like a servant.
Okay.
Like
yeah,
that's what it really strongly hints
yeah.
in the book. And I was really hoping and waiting for like something to come through for him in the book
yeah.
and nothing really did. So
no.
I felt kind of bad for him. I mean, he ended up better off anyway, but his relationship with Nicholas and Smike
mm-hmm.
was cut down a lot in the film. And because in the book, they when they leave Dotheboys Hall, they end up at his house.
Living with him for a while.
Yeah. And like Nicholas checks in on his family and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's like a whole kind of like almost like falling out with Nicholas and his mom
mm-hmm.
at one point because Ralph like comes into the picture and is horrible and whatever. But like Nicholas and Smike are secretly living with Noggs.
Yeah.
And there's like this whole bit where you can see like Noggs is like really helping them out in that. I missed that.
Mm,
I missed that okay. in the film. I mean, it was fine. Like,
yeah.
it wasn't bad, but I missed the level that their relationship was at and like the respect that Noggs had for Nicholas and that
yeah.
he was really looking out for him and helping him and that sort of thing. And like mm-hmm. the little he had, he was sharing with him sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because in the movie, when they leave Dotheboys Hall, they just basically like end up just running into the Crummles family.
Because
mm-hmm.
there's a whole section
yeah,
cut from there,
yeah,
a couple chapters.
It's funny because in the book, it's like, well, what are we going to do? He's like, well, I got to get a job. And he's like, I don't know what we can do. He's like, well, if you don't know what to do, you just end up a sailor. He's like, so they're on their way to Portsmouth to be sailors.
Mm-hmm.
And Smike's nervous. He's like, can I be a sailor? He's like, can I, like, with how bad off I am?
Yeah.
And Nicholas is like, whatever we have to do, like, I'm not going to leave you, you know?
Yeah.
He's so loyal. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's definitely a lot of side, for in what you said, side quests in the book.
I was playing Skyrim this week.
I was thinking more Dungeons & Dragons.
I actually was doing some of that, too, this week.
Mm-hmm. I have a whole list here, but interject anytime you want to.
All right.
So, in the book, Nicholas rescues Kate. So, in the book, it's almost like he's disowned from his family a little bit.
Yeah.
When mm-hmm. he comes back from Dotheboys Hall because mm-hmm. of the lies that the Squeers have told about him and
yeah.
stuff. And his mother, like, not believing him and
that
all that.
She chose to believe.
And of course, Kate's like, why would you not believe him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nicholas is trustworthy and all that stuff. But then Nicholas Nicholas, like, basically has the landlady, Mrs. McCreevy, to... That's her name, right?
Yep, McCreevy.
Like, he, like, basically, like, asks her to look after his family.
Mm-hmm.
Which I... Because she believed him.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just nice that there was always some people who were, like, who trusted him and believed him and helped him out and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then he... That's when he goes off to be a sailor, and then he runs into the Crummels, and mm-hmm. then he joins their acting troupe, he and Smike. And so I love that Smike had a moment, like a while where like he was a great actor. Like it was like he was good at something.
Yeah.
Like I loved that. You know?
In the book?
Uh huh. They hint at it in the movie.
Yeah, I was going to say
his acting career is so short in the movie.
Yes, it is. Because I feel like Nicholas didn't have much of an acting career in the book. It was more a writer, wasn't it?
He started off as a writer because of his education.
That's what it was. And then at the very end is when he started acting.
He started off as a writer because he was educated and they basically were ripping off plays.
Oh, okay.
They were ripping off other
rewriting them.
That's
what it was,
Because they were like French plays. He's like, nobody will know. He's like, you speak French? Great, translate this, but change it.
Yes.
It's funny because in the introduction for this and at the beginning, Charles Dickens, he talks about how upset he was with people who were doing things like that with his stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like there were people who were already coming out with productions of Nicholas Nickleby mm-hmm. where they were writing their own endings before he had even written his. He's like, you don't know what I'm going to write. But because back then, copyright laws were almost non-existent.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about that with Shakespeare, remember?
Yes.
Yeah. So they had kind of convinced Smike to be an actor, and they'd also kind of convinced Nicholas to be an actor as well, because they kind of just needed it.
Oh, okay.
Because they needed an extra actor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But they were paying him to be the writer. And so it was like, we really need enough characters to supply for our troupe, so can you just write in a character, you know? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things they could have done better in the film is like maybe they could have done like a montage to show like how long they were traveling with the troupe. Because
mm-hmm.
they literally did like one show.
I know.
And then were gone.
Yeah.
But they had established such a great rapport with them. I think they really should have, for the film, they could have like maybe shown them traveling with them or something. Like I know they were cutting down for time.
Yeah.
And I bet you there's a bunch of deleted stuff.
I'm sure there were.
But I think that's one of the things it could have done better on,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But it's okay.
No, I think, well, that's also some of the some of the more memorable actors are in.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely one of the happiest parts of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I liked about the movie is it seems very obvious until when you say it, but when you're watching it, you might miss it. They wanted to show all the color in Nicholas's life mm-hmm. in Devon when they were at the family's home out in the country.
Oh, okay.
That's like the most bright and colorful. Mm-hmm. And then when they get to
London,
it's like very dreary. It's very gray and it's bleak. But there's still some color because there's still some hope for the future. But then when you get to Yorkshire, nothing.
Yeah, it was dark.
It was so dark, so gray, no color at all. They literally filmed it like before spring when they were still dead.
That's funny. That's interesting. That's a nice way of juxtaposing the different
Yeah, and they were trying to show like the outcome for Smike, but for Nicholas at the time as well. And then we could talk about it here too. So in the book and in the movie, the headmaster Wackford Squeers, he always has these like axioms that he says to the kids, and they're ridiculous.
Yeah,
But it's like things to live by, and it was kind of a really fun artistic choice that in the film they had like all of them scrawled on the walls.
I did notice that.
Yeah, so it felt more oppressive, but it helped it stand out and made it interesting. They filmed that in actual old mill.
Oh.
Like, they didn't build that. Like, that was a real place.
Uh-huh.
And they said that there were actually some of the flooring they didn't trust.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, kind of with that thematic use of the background, you know, I don't know if this came up at all, but one of the things that caught my attention is when he took Smike out to the old home, and he lays him in the bed, and the bed's all dusty and full of spider webs.
Oh yeah,
you know, and I don't know if it was just, you know, supposed to be, oh, it's an old bed, we haven't been here forever. And but my wife pointed out, she's like, why would you lay anyone on a back? Wouldn't you clean the bed first before you light them on the, lay, you know, lay someone on it? And so part of me was wondering, like, since I knew the ending, I was thinking, like, oh, is that kind of a portent of what's to come?
He didn't talk about that in it. The one thing he talked about in that scene is it really showed how much he cared for Smike and, like, how much he was being, like, a father to Smike and, like, how attentive he was and stuff. But it also shows, like, how bad off Smike is now. Because he just sits down on the bed, like he's not intending to fall asleep.
Yeah.
But because he's so weak, he just like kind of just passes out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he just like lets him, like he just kind of covers him up and lets him sleep.
Yeah.
Sort of thing at that, in that scene specifically. So if we want to go down that rabbit hole, I think it was he didn't really intend for him to fall asleep so much as like because he was sick and dying, he just let him sleep.
Okay.
But when I was talking about light coming in into scenes and stuff like that, one of the things they talk about, which I thought was fun from an artistic standpoint, because I like these things, they tried to really show Smike and Nicholas always in the same frame as much as possible to show how together they were.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And, but like not at first, because like when they first meet, they're not in frame together. And so they cut back and forth and there's like that really sad scene when he first really meets Smike, like when it's their first one-on-one scene.
Yeah.
I think he's like stoking the coals or something for him. And Smike ends up opening up, and after like, I think Nicholas puts his coat around him to warm him up. And he's not used to like comfort and kindness.
Is that when
stuff.
He's teaching him to read?
Not yet.
Okay.
And he talks to him and he says, Smike says to him, he knows he's going to die at some point. But when he talks about like the one boy in the school who died, but the boy knew that he had family and like, and it was like so sad.
It was, yeah. And the faces appeared.
Yeah. Yeah. But he says, but no faces are going to appear for me when I die and that stuff. But then later on, the nice part about it is that Nicholas is there for him.
Yeah.
And so like when he dies, he's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, there's the added bit of he knows he's going to heaven, and like he sees something, he says it's Eden, and and all that, you know.
Yeah.
They at first they're not in the same frame, but then as soon as they start to become closer,
yeah,
and like they develop a relationship, that friendship with each other, they're always in the same frame when it's just the two of them. And so
I didn't catch that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like when it's just the two of them only though.
Okay.
Until later on when they start to have the rift between them because he's starting to die, that's when they start separating them again.
Okay.
Yeah. And so when they leave the school, when essentially, you know, Nicholas has liberated him, that's when you start seeing color come back into the film. So it starts with a little bit of green in the forest when John Brody comes and like gives them money and congratulates him and stuff.
Yeah.
But then as they're walking, you see a bunch of blue in the sky.
I remember the brightness.
Yeah.
I remember it did get bright when they met John Brody.
This is very common. They wanted to show a lot of, in warm scenes, like really happy scenes, it was warm colors. And obviously it was cold colors in the unhappy scenes. Okay. Like in Ralph's house, like it feels like it should be warm, but it's a very cool tone, even though the wood's very warm.
It's very dark.
Yeah. But whenever there's like heroic scenes and stuff, it was like blues. Yeah.
I have to watch it again to see all this. Yeah. I don't remember
and
any
so,
of this.
Yeah. There's a lot like that I like. And they said it was funny because he said they filmed at like an actual, like very famous house. I think it's called Lighten House or something, for the scene where Lord Verisoft stands up to Lord Mulberry Hawk. And they said in that scene, there's a lot of blue in there. And they said part of the way they kind of got around that is because Lord Verisoft is being heroic in that scene.
Oh, okay. I mean, I remember the scenes. I just don't remember any of the colors.
From an artistic standpoint, they attributed death with Ralph. And or loss.
Okay.
And so when you get to his house, it's like all of these stuffed birds and eggs that never hatched. Or like limbs and things, you know, things that are dead or things that have lost things.
Yeah, those were kind of creepy.
It was funny because originally they said they wanted to have almost no decoration in his home to show that he doesn't care about it.
Yeah.
But then they were saying for the time period, though, someone of his stature would have things because the people in the Victorian period liked to collect things and it was a sign of your wealth. And even if you didn't care, like, you still would have things.
Yes. Yeah.
And it wouldn't be like gaudy, but you would have things.
Okay.
And so that they went that route from like artistic standpoint for Ralph. And they said even in like the dining room scene, when it seems very decked out, when you look at the paintings on his wall, it's all dead. Like, it's these trees and stuff with no limbs.
Interesting.
Like no leaves on them and stuff. Yeah. And they said, like, it's a yellow, which seems like it should be happy, but it's like an acrid yellow. Like, it's turned.
Yeah.
Like, they did a lot of things like that.
Okay.
Which I liked. Sorry, I like those things, so...
No, they're interesting. I went coming at it post-movie, I have the frame of reference for the scenes, but I didn't really pay attention to that.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of things people don't really pay attention to unless you're really looking or you're thinking about it or you're in tune with it. But they're saying, if you look at it, because Nicholas and his family are in mourning, and at this time period, if you were a direct relation to the deceased, you were in mourning a long time.
Yes. I picked that up when, because he was still wearing something when he met Cherubly.
The Cherubly brothers, yes.
Cherubly, yeah.
Yeah, well, in the book, they it's a point of conversation. In the book, they mention, oh, you're in mourning. Like, may I ask who passed? And he said, my father. And then that's like what helps build the relationship at first.
Yeah, I think it was wearing a band or something still.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... The mom would have been in black the longest because she was the wife.
Okay.
And she would have been limited to what she could do for a long time. We don't know how long ago he had passed when they came to London. It probably wasn't that long ago. But Kate would have had to change her clothes for work.
Yeah.
Nicholas did not. Nicholas is in the same outfit almost the whole movie, except for when he's in Devon, because it was showing like he's at more at ease.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. But there's a really cool bit where Kate, unless she's at the theater when she goes in her blue dress, blue again.
Yeah.
When she's in black mourning until she stands up to her uncle, and then she's in black, but it's a floral print on it. And he's like, and it's funny, the director's like, you can take that as you think it would go. He's like, it's kind of obvious what we're doing there, I think.
Yeah.
Like, she's blossoming into her own, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but it's like, there's that contrast in that scene, though, because it's all the death at Ralph's, and she has new life.
Okay.
It's subtle, but they did it on purpose.
Okay.
But that scene's where you first see it.
Yeah.
Because that's when she first stands up to her, against her uncle, like, as a woman, and to stand up for her honor and all that stuff, you know? And, like, she wants nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
Which would not have been easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool because they pointed out that she was very strong and firm and that she did not get emotional with her uncle. And then when Noggs was emotional and was empathetic with her, that's when she cried.
Oh, okay. I vaguely remember the scene from the book. I know I remember it from the movie.
I know. I'm a little long-winded here. Forgive me. so.
Forgiven. Just kidding.
When Nicholas and Smike are out with the Crummels, it's funny because in the book, there's a bit where Nicholas finally gets a letter from his sister. I think it's from his sister, right? Is it his sister or is it someone else who wrote to
him? That was Noggs.
It was probably Noggs.
I think it was Noggs, yeah.
I can't remember. I think Noggs learned about what's going on with Kate, right?
Yeah, and he warns him to come back.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. It was one of those things that got a little weird just on like how it went down.
Yeah.
But... he hears from Noggs about Kate and how he should come back and like help her. And there's a moment in the book, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, where Nicholas tells Smike, you should stay with the Crummels, right? Like you're doing well acting with them. You seem happy. Like you should stay with them.
I think so. I don't remember.
But then Smike says, no, I'm going to go with you anywhere you go. Like, okay. And that's where he has like that bit about like, you're my home.
Yes. Yes. I remember that now.
They didn't really cover that in the movie. Like, it just kind of assumed that he's going to go with him.
Yeah.
There's like elements like that that's kind of gone. But in the book, Nicholas rescues Kate from employment with the Wititterlys,
mm-hmm.
which that is was, not in the movie.
That was not in the movie.
Mrs. Wititterly is a hypochondriac, and she puts on a show of her frailty and poor health.
Yeah.
But she has a fierce temper when she does not get her way. And Kate is employed essentially as like a companion to her, which was an actual thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were like, if you were a gentleman's daughter or from a higher class, you were very limited on any sort of job you could have.
Yeah.
Lower class, there's a lot of jobs you could have.
Mm-hmm.
Upper class, not so much.
Yeah.
That's why one of the few jobs you could have if you were from the aristocracy and a woman
mm-hmm.
is you could be a governess.
Mm.
But you really did not want to be because it was not great.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes.
Just
there's a woman named Ellie Dashwood on YouTube who does a lot of historical stuff and from the Regency time period especially.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll talk a lot about Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives a lot of context and I love her stuff.
Hmm.
So you look her up. But she talked about governesses and stuff and how it really was not great.
Interesting.
But it was like a way to have to get money.
Yeah.
Because you just were expected not to work if you were from the higher class.
Yeah.
And so there would just not be much available.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Kate goes to work with Mrs. Wititterly as a companion, essentially. Mrs. Wititterly is oblivious to the degradation that Kate is subjected to under her nose. And she's only concerned about being visited by noblemen
mm-hmm.
because at this time, Lord Verisopht and Lord Mulberry Hawk are visiting Kate.
Yeah.
And because they're visiting Kate, she reprimands her for flirting with them.
Mm-hmm.
But she also does not allow her to not see them. Like, she kind of forces Kate to see the noblemen because the noblemen have come to their house.
Yeah. It was a weird...
It was weird, but it was one of those things where...
I mean, I understood it.
Yeah.
Especially in the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the personalities.
Yeah. Well, and it would have been a great affront not to, and mm-hmm. it would have been very difficult for Kate to stand up for herself in that scene because then she could have just lost her job.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, Nicholas comes and he basically is like, yeah, you're not working here anymore.
Yeah.
And he didn't want the two lords to know where Kate lived.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And that's not in the movie at all.
Nope.
That's it was funny because I was trying to think, because he gets called away to help Kate
mm-hmm.
in the movie. But then other than coming across Lord Mulberry Hawk and having like that brief fight with him in the restaurant or whatever it is.
It's not really fleshed out.
It never really discusses why he had to come back to London.
Yeah,
in the movie.
I think
that was an oversight. I wonder if there was a deleted scene.
Maybe.
I think if you're not really paying attention, you don't think about it because he did confront Lord Mulberry Hawk.
I think when I was watching it, I was under the assumption it was more that she was facing troubles and that's why she needed to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kind of...
Well, and in the movie, there was less of a reason for him to be away.
Yeah.
Because in the book, it was more like he was kind of disowned and he needed to stay away, but he wanted to support his family, so he was sending money back. But in the movie, that didn't really happen at all.
No, it was more he just, on his way from the school...
And then he ran into the Crummels and kind of got a job on the fly.
So I don't even think he sent money to them like he did in the book.
Well, it happened so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Nicholas is away for a lot longer in the book for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember because like right after that scene, I think it cuts to Ralph talking to Squeers or someone, but then it cuts to Nicholas introducing Smike to his family. And it's like everything's hunky-dory.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like... What was wrong?
I think that was also a part of the cutting of the mother. Because, I mean, she kind of played a role both in pushing her daughter and trying to find her a husband with, you know, by, oh, here's these two gentlemen.
Right, and she didn't, and because the two gentlemen, and then the two, we didn't talk about these two characters, but it was like, was it Pike and Smike? Not Smike, Pike and...
I know who you're talking about.
It almost the rhymes. Henchmen. Yeah, it's like two henchmen.
I don't remember their names.
Who were like really good at sweet talking people
mm-hmm.
and do like Lord Mulberry Hawk's evil doings.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember their names.
Anyway, they were really good at distracting her. That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good thing Nicholas came back.
Yeah.
And then Madeline Bray is introduced again in the movie. She has a moment where what does she say to him again? She sees him because Nicholas is trying to get a job
mm-hmm.
and he can't get anything. and he's going around checking the job places, and then does she just check in on him? Like, she just sees that he's distraught and she asks if he's okay.
Wasn't she in there talking to
not
the
yet
guy?
Not yet. She's like on her way to go in, and then he's like leaning against the notice board, and yeah, she says something to him. I don't remember. I think
scene.
She checks on him. I think she asks if he's okay.
Oh, okay.
And then he's like, oh, I know you. But then she goes in and she's asking for work and stuff, and she can't get anything, and so she runs away upset because she's gonna be thrown out on the street.
Yeah.
In the book, Kate experiences far more hardships at the hands of her uncle.
Yes.
Like I said, she worked for the Mantolinis, and Mr. Mantolini like really tried to have his way with her.
Mm-hmm.
Not very subtly. It was funny how in the book they play it off like he would threaten to kill himself, basically. Like, if
I know.
And so like that would just make things better. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
In the end, he definitely got his comeuppance, though.
Yep.
I love that they just kind of stumble upon him and check in on him. And they're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
In the book, like I said, Mrs. Nickleby takes a lot of convincing by her children to believe them at times, and is very easily fooled and manipulated by people. I already said that Dickens based her on his mother,
mm-hmm,
which gives you some insight. Do you know one of the bigger changes that they made for the film?
No. Outside of the cutting of the stuff, no. What else is there?
So, Smike starts to fall in love with Kate because she's just a lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
And she cares for him. And he's not used to that. And she's beautiful. And so he wants to do something for her. But then...
Oh, the ribbon thing.
Yes, and he's kidnapped by Squeers.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because of Ralph. But
it was different in the movie than it was in the book. Yeah, I remember that.
It's a little different. The movie just streamlines.
Yeah.
Really. But Squeers comes... it's weird. It's one of those things in the book where like someone came up, found Smike, and then told Squeers, and then they kidnapped him.
Yeah.
And anyway, doesn't matter. But in the book, Squeers ends up with Smike and is going to take him back to Dotheboys Hall, which would be horrible for Smike.
Yeah.
It's like death. And in the book, John Browdy is on his honeymoon.
Yes.
Essentially, in London with his wife, and who you meet really early on. And he just doesn't like Squeers at all. And it's more like he's interacting with him just out of politeness.
Mm-hmm.
And he learns that Squeers is taking Smike back to Dotheboys Hall.
Yeah, that one's completely different.
And so in the book, he just kind of like out of spite saves Smike.
Yeah.
And is happy he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the movie...
Yeah.
Do you want to say how he did it?
In the movie, it's Nicholas who learns about it from Noggs, right?
Yes.
And then
he's working for the Cheerable Brothers, and then Kate runs to tell them, and then it's like Noggs and Nicholas work together to try to get him out of it.
Mm-hmm. And then instead of Brody being the one to rescue him and do all that, he helps them by distracting Smike. I mean, not Smike, Squeers.
Yeah, and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Nicholas is the one who actually goes and saves Smike.
And it's a lot more intense than it is in the book. I thought the book one was actually pretty
intense.
It was, but it's not where, like in the book, it's more literary intense, where in the movie, it's visually intense.
It's visually intense, but also funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the bit when they go to leave and... John Brody needs to make sure that they're not seen leaving, and so he just opens the door and inspects the door.
And he's like, fine door.
And literally everyone, including his wife, is like, what?
That was funny.
Yeah. I get it from like a film standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The director McGrath said in the commentary that the in the book it is a little random that he kind of just stumbles upon it and just saves him.
Yeah.
And he said when your hero it's one of those things where like you kind of need your hero to save him, but it's also because it didn't need to be done.
Yeah, no, it didn't.
But you know, it didn't hurt.
Yeah,
yeah. I can see why they did it.
Yeah, no, I can.
And I'm not mad they did it, but it is different.
It is different.
It's one of those things also where it's a little different in that in the book, it's more of the relationships these characters have built and the morals of these characters coming to fruition.
Yeah.
And it's still happening like that in the movie. It's just different. Because John Brody still plays a very important part and could very easily turn him in.
Yeah.
And is risking something by doing, by helping Nicholas and Smike. But it's different.
Yeah. No, it is. I thought it was a fine scene.
Yeah, I was fine with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just different. Something in the book that is omitted from the movie, like I said, is how Lord Verisoff fights Lord Mulberry Hawk because of the terrible behavior in general and specifically to Nicholas and his sister. And like I said, Lord Verisoff dies in a duel against Lord Mulberry Hawk.
Who yeah, that's all. Country. Not in the movie.
I felt so bad for him in the book. I was really thinking was... Lord Verisoff would do more in the book. Like, I thought somehow he'd come into play later in the book.
Yeah.
And then when he died, I was like, oh, he died.
Yeah.
Okay, then. And then you basically don't hear from Lord Hawk at all after he flees the country, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you just get a little bit of epilogue where it says what happens to him. And then in the book, a new character is introduced very late, who is Arthur Gride, the old, crotchety, rich man.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the names are confused. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of names.
Yes.
And in the book, he is to marry Madeline Bray.
Correct, yes.
And... it's like under the guise that he will help her and her father. Her father is horribly abusive. Well, like verbally at least. But of course, you know, like we mentioned, Arthur Gride is just using them because he knows that she's going to inherit a bunch of money from her grandfather because he has the will and he's holding it in secret.
Yes.
And Ralph... you know, he's always trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't remember exactly how it worked out because it gets confusing. He's already losing a bunch of money because of Nicholas, essentially, and his own horrible character. Like, he no longer is going to make money from Lord Verisoft because Lord Verisoft is not going to invest with him. And he's no longer going to make money from Lord Mulberry Hawk because he had to flee the country.
Yeah.
And other people. And so he's going to make money from Arthur Gride, I think, because... I think Ralph is the one who, like, made the connection, right? Isn't Ralph the one that kind of introduced Arthur Gride to Mr. Bray?
And, he did. I don't remember.
Basically, like, kind of arranged the marriage.
Yeah, he arranged it all. But he also did it under the guise of, like, I don't remember the details, but there was also going to be a paying off of debts or something like that. Yeah.
Well, because wasn't it, like, Ralph was going to pay off the debts?
Something like
that. So that they could get married? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it got confusing.
Yeah.
But either way, it hinged on him marrying Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, which is not in the movie, there's this whole bit where Nicholas is falling in love with Madeline, even though he only really saw her the one time.
Yeah.
Which is one of those things I just have to overlook in a book. And I think if I'm just being easy, I guess, on the book... the concept of, like, characters falling in love in older literature is just different.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
In the book, he just, like, immediately starts falling in love with Madeline and is, like, infatuated with her just from seeing her the one time.
Yeah.
And feeling bad for her, really, because he, like, wants to help her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he meets the Cheeryble brothers and goes to work for them, there's this whole bit where he needs to be professional to help her. When he, like, agrees to help her. Because the Cheeryble brothers go to Nicholas and ask for his help to help Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this whole backstory that's about how Madeline's mother was originally... like, one of the Cheeryble brothers was in love with her, right?
Correct.
And so, like, they still, like, want to help her out.
Mm-hmm.
And were helping her out. But then the mom died.
Yeah.
And so now... Madeline is gone to them to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to help her, but they can't make it look like they're helping her.
Correct.
Because then the father won't take the help.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come up with this whole ruse of how they need they cannot help her because the father knows them.
Yes.
And they can't have Frank, the one son, go help because they also know him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ask Nicholas if Nicholas will go in and help. And pretend to be someone buying portraits from Madeline so that she can get money.
Yeah.
Because Madeline can't just show up with money randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's this whole ruse, right? In the book, they kind of make it clear to him that this needs to be a professional, like this, like we can't let emotions get in the way, that sort of thing. And so then Nicholas has this whole turmoil in himself where he's like, I love her, like I want to do something about that, but I need, like, duty needs to come first.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I honor my bosses who have given me so much help in my life and all these things, and I don't want to let them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to make a personal sacrifice here, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's something the movie doesn't cover. That's something the movie's not interested in.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's not important. But it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it definitely showed his character and stuff, which I liked.
Yeah.
It's just, it's funny because I forgot about this, but the movie rearranged a couple things. Did you catch it?
To be honest, no.
So in the book, Nicholas goes and ends up saving Madeline because they learn about what's going on with Arthur Gride and everything. And she's going to go through with it because she wants to help her father.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really see an alternative. But, you know, he's not going to admit he loves her because of all that, everything.
In the book.
Yes, in the book.
Yeah, I remember all the intricacies of the book compared to the
movie. I just loved how conveniently the father dies.
In the book?
Well, both. In the book and the movie.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Because then it's like, well, you're off the hook now, Madeline.
I know. That was a very big...
Yeah. It got a little violent in the book. It was kind of fun.
Vaguely remember. I just remember he went upstairs. I remember the dream. The father had a dream about the floor swallowing him. Yeah, the difference is there. And then, of course, the very ending, I remember being very different in the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because in the book, he brings Kate with him.
Correct. To help him.
To help. And also because, like, it would be the good thing to do to bring another woman to help with this woman.
Yeah.
Kate does not come with him in the movie.
Mm-mm.
And in the movie, he basically kind of confesses his love, I think, in a way. Like, he wants to be there to help her and...
Probably. I think I remember that.
Yeah, it's a little different. Mm-hmm. It's a little different how it plays out. I don't remember specifically. I have to go back and watch it. But in the book, he goes and he ends up saving her. Like, it's cool because he, like, it's a whole planned out thing.
Mm.
And so, like, that was when I was saying you can see how his character growth changes and stuff because it starts from him reacting emotionally and stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
To, like, now, like, we're gonna help this person, but it's going to be well planned out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do all this stuff, you know, and my friends are going to come alongside me to do it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like one of those things where he doesn't want to admit his feelings for her because she's also kind of living under their roof.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't want to admit that he loves her and he cares for her because of that.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Smike gets sick in the book.
Yeah.
And so then he goes off with Smike and he's trying to get Smike's help back, but it doesn't work and Smike dies.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and there's like the whole bit where it's like, you need to admit to her that you love her kind of thing. And then everything kind of falls together, and then you find out everything about Ralph and Smike and everything, right? From the Cheerable Brothers, and everything kind of just falls into place slowly. In the movie, Smike dies before he saves Madeline.
Correct, yes.
He's called back to save Madeline in the movie, which is different.
Yeah.
It's flipped. I think it works better from a pacing standpoint for the movie, but it's different.
It is, yeah.
The biggest change that I understand why they did it for the movie, but doesn't make any sense from a contextual standpoint, is in the movie, they changed it so that it's not a new character, Arthur Gride, who's trying to marry her. It's Sir Mulberry Hawk.
I just figured they just didn't want to add another character.
No, I think that's the only reason.
Yeah.
And I think because they essentially boiled down a lot of the really negative characters into his character anyway.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And I'm not angry they did it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense from like a historical standpoint.
Yeah.
And from the book. Because Sir Lord Mulberry Hawk would never have married her.
Yeah.
Like, it just, he never would have. He would have probably tried to seduce her and like have his way with her, But he wouldn't have married her.
Yeah, but I think it was just because they weren't going to kill him off like they did in the movie. I mean, in the book, sorry. That they...
Right.
I think, and then the whole point of not having to add the whole backstory of Arthur Griggs or Griggs, or whatever.
I think if they were to have a longer movie, or like I said, if they made a miniseries, mm-hmm. I think they could have added Arthur Gride in.
Probably.
But like added him in earlier to the movie so that you knew who his character was, even briefly. Kind of like how they showed Madeline early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could have done that. And I think they could have included the duel with Verisoft, but maybe move it later.
Yeah.
So then it's more of like an... like.
Possibly. I think it would have messed up the pacing and everything else, though.
I think there was a way to do it. I think they could have worked it out. So then, like, he has his comeuppance, you know? it was one of those things where, like, it made sense for the movie, but not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just gotten so used to them people cutting stuff to make movies flow better. I noticed it. It was a jarring thing because I've read the book and read it recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I just went with it.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From an adaptation standpoint, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And also because you want to see him loose.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see Lord Mulberry Hawk loose. In the film, the one scene they added in that's not in the book, it's just kind of referenced, is the declaration of love and the proposal between Nicholas and Madeline.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. I'm pretty sure when I watched it, I just assumed it was a standard modern edition, contemporary edition, because it's something that's expected.
People want to see
It's expected
the proposal.
In movies.
They want to see the Declaration of Love and stuff. It was different back then in the Victorian period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, love existed. Love was definitely a thing. Even well before the Victorian period, there was debate between like what's better in a marriage, love or like practicality.
Yeah.
And so like there, even to this day, there's some extent there is that. I think we are pushed way too far into the emotional side. I still think that there needs to be discussion about, is this a good fit? Is this a good contrast to you or compliment to you?
And no, I agree, and it's a complicated...
Like, I don't think marriage should just be utilitarian at all. But... yeah, I definitely think there should be a connection and emotion and love in some respect, you know. But I think no extremes. But what was a little interesting is in the film adaptation, the director, McGrath, said he wanted to show that Nicholas is not a superhero, which he's not. And that he is not just there to save everybody.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that they kind of put in for the film in his scene with just Madeline, when he's kind of declaring his love for her and proposing to her, like basically it turns into like, we're here for each other. Like essentially we're going to save each other sort of thing. We're going to help each other be better and like be better people and grow and stuff. And like he's not there for her just to save her and that sort of thing. Like I thought it worked well. Like it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was I just mentioned it because it's different.
It is.
It was something they added in.
I've gotten used to the adding contemporary things into old
movies. Yeah, but I also liked it because it did kind of humanize him, because it you could watch it very much like he saved that person, he saved that person, he saved that person. I will say Charlie Hunnam does a great job when he's emotionally acting. Like when he cries or when he's upset, he does a good job.
I have to pay attention.
Because in the movie, he'll get angry at times for like just reasons.
Yeah.
He does kind of break down a little bit when he's in Yorkshire, like that first night. Because he had to be strong for everybody else. But now that he's alone, and it's after all this has happened, and he's alone, that's when he kind of cries and he breaks down a little bit, because he's like processing everything, you know?
Yeah.
But then later on, after he's like saved a bunch of people essentially and stood up against his uncle and all these things, like he's been very strong. And then he finds out Smike's going to die. And then he kind of like talks to his father and he breaks down because he does not want Smike to die. And that, I loved that. It just, you know, it humanized him. I loved it. He did a good job. Okay, and then here's where it gets real Hollywood. One of the big changes in the film, the ending, before the wedding,
The confrontation with...
The confrontation scene.
Yeah, that was very different.
It was very Hollywood.
It was, yeah. But I mean, I figured it's a movie. They had to make it more climatic, if you will. Yeah.
This is what I was saying. In some ways, Dickens is very realistic in his writing. Mm-hmm. In the book, it was the Cheeryble brothers who end up kind of confronting Ralph with... Was it Booker?
With a guy. Yeah. I don't remember his name.
The one who first took Smike away. Mm-hmm. It's cool. They hint in the book and the movie that when Smike is dying, that he sees the guy who took him away, mm-hmm. and he's like scared and stuff. And Nicholas kind of writes it off like he's dying, mm-hmm. he's seeing things, sort of thing. But then you find out that Brooker was there.
Mm-hmm. And, he was there.
Yeah, and he was trying to get money from Ralph for the whole movie. He was blackmailing him, and then he ends up telling Noggs.
Yeah,
and that's how they find out about Smike and everything. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, it's kind of just the Cheeryble brothers who are like telling him like, hey, you know what? We're just telling you just so that you need to know that this is happening, essentially. It was very matter of fact, very business professional, you know? Mm-hmm. In the movie, it's much more of like an emotional culmination. Everybody like come back. It's Nicholas with Madeline, and then it's Kate, and it's the Cheerables, and it's Brooker, and is anybody else who's at it? Noggs, of course.
Noggs, yeah.
And you know, I liked it. It was fine.
Yeah,
it worked well for it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that means that Nicholas and Noggs are there for when Ralph kills himself.
Yeah,
which is a little different. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with everybody there at the wedding, including the Crummels.
Yeah,
who are not in America.
Yeah.
But it ends with Alan Cumming finally doing his Highland dance.
That was funny.
Yes. And any other changes you can think of?
No. I mean, there were others, but I think
they're
all
sure.
Tiny, you know.
The main thing is they just cut a lot of the subplots.
Yeah.
A lot of the minor characters.
No, I think overall it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Very different feel than the book.
But you thought it was a different feel? A little bit. It was a little artistic.
It was, and I think that's what made it different. It was the same story, but it had a lighter feel to it.
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because there's definitely a lot more in the book that is upsetting.
Yeah.
And a lot more of side quests, as you said, that were just depressing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it kind of slogs through at times. Mm-hmm. And you're just reading, you're like, oh, this is sad. But then, of course, you know, it brings funny characters out, and it's like the Lily Vic and everybody, you know.
Yeah, but it's just from 35 hours to, I don't even know how long the movie was, 2 hours maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
So there was a lot of differences and a lot of different feel.
Yeah.
But it was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
And the plot stayed the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like they tried to impose anything into it or anything. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
Nope.
So, who's your favorite character? Book? You can say book or movie. Or both.
I don't know. I don't know. Because it's like I liked all different aspects of the different characters. But I think in the book, I really like John Brody. And the way he was fleshed out in the book.
I liked him a lot in the book, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fine in the movie, but you get a lot less of him.
Yes. And then in the movie, they were all good characters. I think probably Mr. Crummels.
Mm. I liked him in both. I also really liked that his last name is similar to mine. Because when I was reading it, I didn't know how it was supposed to be pronounced.
Okay.
And so in some ways, I was like, is this like a derivation of mine?
An ancestor of yours.
I told someone once when I was reading it, I was like, there's a character in a Dickens book who has a name very similar to mine. And my name's already very British.
Mm-hmm.
I think a shout out in the movie is Mrs. Crummels.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Very memorable. But I think my favorite in both, for very similar reasons, just slightly different, is Nicholas.
Okay.
I really like Nicholas in both. I loved how he stands up for injustice, but it's like himself and his family and Smike, and I love his loyalty and so on. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot about his character I really, really liked, and he was very sure of himself, almost to a fault.
Yeah.
And It was something I did not pick up in the book until I really listened to the commentary in the film. Mm. That whole bit I told you about how you see his character growth and how he responds mm-hmm. to situations.
Yeah.
Because definitely in the beginning, like, he does kind of get himself into trouble for being violent.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Squeers was horrible.
Yeah.
But he does get into trouble because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the book and definitely the movie, you see how he reacts to things has changed. But he still stands up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked it. He was great. I really enjoyed him. I think Charlie Hunnam or whatever did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny just because he looks different than the illustrations, but I don't know. There's something he brings to the character that mm-hmm. I really liked.
Okay. Another character that I really
liked. He was softer in the film, though.
Yes. Another one that I really liked in the book that was pretty much cut out of the movie, though she did appear, was Ms. LaCreevy.
I know.
In the book,
she's barely in the movie.
I liked how Dickens was able to use her.
I wanted more of her.
He used her character to play some very pivotal points and roles. Yeah.
I love that she ends in a kind of happy marriage.
Yes, and he was cut from the movie too, Mr.
Oh yeah,
Lincoln
he
Water.
Was completely cut.
He worked for the Cherubles.
Yeah, the Cherubles.
Cherubles, yeah, and
this is your this is your Hagrid.
Yes, I'm also I'm extremely tired.
Yeah,
it's almost midnight. We're recording this, but I appreciated the roles that she played, whether mm-hmm. it was helping the mother. And she was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was really intelligent in the book.
But, and she picked up on things before the people.
She did, but she kept it. And she kept it to herself and used it appropriately when needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a really, going back to women from what we talked about before, as written in the book, I thought she was a really well-written character.
Mm-hmm.
Subtle, intelligent. But I
had a lot of respect for her in the book.
Yes. At first glance, you're like, oh, she's just some...
She's kind of wacky when you first meet her.
Because what, she either paints or makes
she
miniatures.
She does little miniatures.
She has little miniatures, yes. So, but yeah, those are the characters for me.
Well, it's funny because isn't it like when Lord Verisoft and Lord Mulberry Hawk go to visit when they're still staying with her?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, they're not good people.
Yeah. Yeah. And poor Mrs. Nickleby.
No.
Can't see it.
Yeah, well... Okay, now our arbitrary scale. One being, God, I wish I didn't read or watch this. And 10 being, this is so great and amazing. And I was trying to change my scale, you know?
Yeah.
Worthy of all praise. Where does this fall for you? The book first, and then the movie.
So I think for me, the book, I'll give it a nice 7.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I...
That's a good grade for you, though.
It is. And a lot of it was more that it is a long book. It's written in a format that I had to get used to. So it is something I wouldn't mind down the road reading again. But like you said, I would come at it in a different way now.
Mm-hmm. More of that serialization format.
Yes. But I will say I liked his writing. His prose and use of, you know, the way he explains things.
His characterization
done. Yes. Beautifully written.
His names for characters.
Memorable,
he
you
has
know?
Great names for mm-hmm. characters.
Yeah. Yeah. But the only reason I would give it lower down as a 7 is because it is a long book.
For sure.
It is episodic.
There are definitely bits that drag.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Lord of the Rings for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe not as draggy as some of Lord of the Rings, though.
Yeah, I kind of started to bring it up earlier, and I'll repeat it here. Dickens stories are great.
Mm-hmm.
Dickens stories are great. They adapt well.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times when you adapt them, they just cut the fat.
Yeah, correct.
But because the story, the plot,
mm-hmm.
and the characterizations are great,
mm-hmm.
you can cut the fat.
Yes.
And what's left is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you... like really fleshed out things and world building and random like vignettes,
mm-hmm.
then the book's great.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go into it knowing, oh, you really like this character?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like their cousin's neighbor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's what happens with Dickens. Mm-hmm. I read this somewhere, and I don't know if this is true, but I have said it before, so why not? I have read somewhere that he was paid by the page?
Maybe. I know he was definitely... I know they usually would pay them according just for the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But he might have been paid by the page.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Which would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about the movie for you?
I'd probably put the movie in the same area. Mm-hmm. It was one of those where I'm probably not going to watch it anytime soon quickly because I have a lot on my plate, but I would definitely sit down and rewatch it again.
At least you can digest it faster than the book.
Definitely. And I think now that you've explained things that I was not aware of, I would be more inclined to sit and watch it again sooner rather than later.
Sure.
You know, just because I've been trying to learn a little bit more about that stuff in film and stuff like that. Did you rate the book? You haven't rated anything yet.
No, I'm about to.
Okay.
The problem is I want to reread it.
Yeah.
Like, I think I might give it a higher rating if I read it again.
Yeah. I feel the same way for both of them. Movie and book.
Just because it's the number I'm kind of sitting on in my head, I'm going to give the book a 6.
Okay.
It's still past the midpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like a grading system in school. It's out of 10. Yeah. So I think I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay.
I want to give the movie an 8.
Okay.
I think I'm going to stick with that. Just because there are some things in it that don't quite make a whole lot of sense if you really think about it.
Yeah.
But it's not too much that it's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it moves almost at a breakneck speed at times because it has to.
Oh, yeah.
And it does cut out a lot, but it's very faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do that. Yeah, I think that's it. So now is the time of the episode where we talk about what type of adaptation is this?
Yes.
And we've talked a lot, so I'm going to try and do this very quickly. If you have not listened to any of our episodes before, please go back and listen to our trailer where we talk about the different types of adaptations that we've come up with. First is true to source material. The second is expanded. The third is artistic. And the fourth is message driven. If you listen to the trailer, we talk a bit more in depth about what those mean. So, Romy, for Nicholas Nickleby.
So, I'm going to go to our modified for expanded and do contracted.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is a little bit of the artistic differences and things like that, but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it is true to source material, but I think instead of expanded, it's true to source material contracted.
Mm. That was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to do...
Message-driven.
Nope. I think I'm actually going to do artistic.
You think there was enough added to
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, artistic is a lot of, like, with metaphors and symbolism and stuff. And I think just with the added bits of, like, with the paper theater and, you know, like, the opening bits with, like, the family, but then, like, the dead bird and a lot of the other things they did. Like, it's not... on par with when we did the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice or anything. And I'm sure we'll come across the one that's very artistic eventually. But I think for this one, it's enough that I want to call it artistic, but faithful.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely condensed.
A combination of the two.
I mean, it's arbitrary anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Great. I enjoyed this one.
I did too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know we've said this before, so forgive me, but I thought we were not going to talk about this one as much as we did. But
we
again,
got 2 episodes out of it.
There's a lot you could talk about, you know? Maybe I'll edit down to 5 minutes. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
a 5-minute episode for us would be like, hi, welcome to Willing to Adapt. Well, this was Nicholas Nickleby. Did you enjoy it? Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, that would be. No, I think this one there was a lot of the changes that were in there. So I let
the changes in context.
I let you go on talk a lot about the changes.
I like to talk about the changes.
I forgot. I'm glad we read this one. I'm glad I persevered and powered through it. And the movie, I think, was a nice reminder. And now, like I said, because of the artistic stuff that I missed, I'll have to go back and rewatch it.
You should.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely will.
Great.
All right.
Well, thank you all for listening.
Yes.
To this. We are, you know, we have a range that we're going to go through this season for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So keep a lookout. We have some more Shakespeare coming up, and we got some more comedies and some sad bits.
We do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we got some classics as well.
Yes.
So we got a bit of a range. So, you know, keep a listen for us. And, you know, like the usual, leave us a comment, you know, leave us
that
a message.
Nice. Yes.
Give us some ideas for what you want to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
We always love to hear from you. And we hope you're all doing well out there. And hopefully this inspired you to pick up a book.
Or at least watch a movie.
Well, that's not as hard.
I know.
Anyway, you take care of yourselves.
Yes, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromi@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.